We are not traitors. I have only ever had one loyalty. To the brothers you see before you. The ones who stormed your bridge and will momentarily relieve you of the supplies you carry. Maybe it does look like treachery to you. Maybe you actually believe warriors like me, the pinnacle of gene-bred evolution in the galaxy, truly exist only to protect your pitiful life. Maybe you do not know of the others. There are far darker beings out there than those you see before you, Captain. Ones as ancient as us, but enslaved to powers beyond your reckoning. We are not them. We will not tear out your soul and feed it to demons, or bind you to nightmares made flesh. We'll just kill you. Attributed to an unidentified Astartes, addressing the captain of the Solar Wind, Inax System 609-3755 M41. In the wake of the Siege of Terra came revenge. Following the great defeat of the Warmaster, the armies of Terra swept outwards from the liberated throne world in implacable pursuit of Horus's shattered legions. It was an age of punitive retribution, of an Imperium, if not resurgent, then certainly unshackled, freed now from the besiegement mentality to pursue the fleeing curs of Lupercal to their grim satisfaction. While the tales of this era are sundry, for our own cause, we shall focus on one that begins in 017 M31, when the first Loyalist fleets reached the long, inviolate volumes of the galactic northeast, fringes of space long held in stranglehold to legions pledged to the cause of Horus. In this case, centered on the Nostramo sector, homeworld of the 8th Primarch, Conrad Kurz. Composed primarily of flotillas drawn from the still-operating Loyalist citadels of Baal and Ultramar, all aboard were eager to inflict upon the fleeing traitors the same mortification they had suffered themselves in the long, terrible years of the Horus Heresy. Weapons had they, ones once forbidden from use. Radphages, dark matter annihilators, and viral devices of dreadful vigor. These were borne by whole battalions of Legionnaires Astartes warriors, blooded in the darkest days of the Age of Darkness, and possessed of a righteous thirst for vengeance. Know then, that this is a record of a mystery, one first encountered by these vengeful warriors, carried throughout the years in the depths of the most occluded archives, and lasting even to this, our present day. A record of the Ashen Claws. Despite their motivating ire, the disposition of these Astartes flotillas was considered by central imperial authorities as barely acceptable for dislodging the expected entrenched Night Lord's forces. The 8th Legion had, for nearly a decade, fortified their ghoulish domain amongst the stars, and knew that there would not be one shred of clemency from their erstwhile cousins, following not only the atrocities of the Heresy, but of the Siege of Terra. Despite the Night Lord's piecemeal participation in the siege itself, theirs was still a Legion excommunicate. In this new Imperium, there was no room for gradated retribution. However, it began to appear that the Imperium's intelligence was out of date. No established opposition was encountered by the Empire's fleets as it entered the so-called Dark Kingdom of the Night Haunter. Of Kurz's hateable legion, only minor warbands were discovered, and even then sporadically, with none of these larger than a single reinforced standard Astartes company. They nevertheless fought with all the malicious spitefulness for which their legion was infamous, blooding the Imperium at every opportunity. Yet these were doomed last stands at best. Minor irritations for the Imperial forces and the military might they possessed. Where the fleets had expected to find vast fortresses teeming with heretic Astartes, they instead found ruins, wind-swept remnants of evils past, sepulchres of sin vacated long hence. Many were abandoned, clearly with no signs of struggle, yet others bore curious indications of battle that the Imperium could not account for, compounded further by the scarred wreckage of Night Lord starships frequently encountered in the volume. It was as if some extremely efficient military force had taken the Eighth Legion utterly by surprise, and repeatedly. The worrying enigma that was unfolding carried with it the distinct possibility that the Night Lords were luring Imperial fleets into some grand trap. The long years of the heresy had inculcated in the Loyalists a hard-earned paranoia for the capabilities and depravity of their traitorous foes. The commanders of the various armadas concurred that a withdrawal from the operational volume would be prudent. The Astartes lords pulled their forces back to the remote fleet anchorage at Caith Leys for regrouping. They had expected to find some fulsome third of the Eighth Legion's estimated remaining strength, but no such concentration was emerging in any capacity. An extensive survey of the local volumes was mounted by every scout vessel the fleets could muster. The endeavor took a full 6 months Terran standard, and the results were still perplexing. Of the expected tens of thousands of traitors, none were found. No hidden holdfast, no concealed ambushers, no massive fleet of starships concealed in a far-off nebula, awaiting a moment to strike Loyalist backs when they were turned. Nothing. With no immediate threat to the Imperium present, despite months of searching, and with a thirst for traitor blood still fueling them, the Astartes fleets departed the Nostramo sector, making wake towards the other fronts of the scouring, where the shattered forces of the War Master still sought to flee Imperial justice. Unaccounted for in history, at this point, were now 30,000 Night Lords, warriors who, for all the world, appeared to have merely vanished. The old saying of gift equines and their mandibles is pertinent here. The Loyalists had done their due diligence, and there were tens of thousands of traitors presumed dead, but yet thousands more still to be put down. It was not until much, much later, as the optimism of those days of renewal passed into the slow, grinding passage of time, that chroniclers returned to the mystery that it ultimately presented. While many scholars proffered explanations for the disappearance of so vast a quantity of Astartes, it was a substantial time before any arrived to reasonable conclusions. The initial explanation arrived at, and generally agreed upon, was that the forces of the Eighth had simply devolved into petty infighting, a legion devouring itself. Never a wholly united force by any means, and bearing little love for their compatriots, the Night Lords were primed for internecine conflict. With the disappearance of their Primarch during the heresy, a power vacuum impossibly large yawed open, one that was impossible to fill. Feuds old and new emerged, and evidence of this is considerable in the years leading up to the siege. It is widely known that as early as 011 M31, the Eighth Legion had abandoned all vestiges of actual military authority and organization, becoming piratical reavers and sadistic murderers, albeit those possessed of a wicked cunning. Scholars posit that, unbeknownst to the Imperium, A full-scale civil war amongst those in midnight clad likely took place as more and more warlords, left behind as the War Master madly plunged into Terran space, clawed at each other for the scraps left behind, and that such a conflict invariably brought more and more of the Night Lords into its maelstrom, all with diminishing returns of conquest and sharply escalating casualty rates. Scattered warbands encountered by the Imperium during the scouring were thus the last vestige of a Legion's empire, devolved into gang scavengers collected by the remaining warlords. For millennia, this explanation was a scholarly accepted one, with the inherent mystery allowed to fade from historical discourse, before becoming actively outlawed as the zealotry of the Imperium increased and mere mention of the traitor legions became suspect. Evidence uncovered within previously restricted archives, however, sheds new and curious light upon this chapter of post-heresy history. This chronicle is a collection of that material, pieced together from several of billions of redacted and restricted pieces of evidence. The first such fragment purports to date from the arrival of the scouring fleets in the Nostramo sector, the initial wave arriving in 675-017-M31. Logged by Consul Vigilator Sargon Varsaris of the 9th chapter of the Blood Angels Legion, his forces encountered no resistance amongst the remains of the fortress moon of Tenebor, merely scattered drifting hulks of wrecked starships. Combat readiness was maintained in case of an ambush, yet no foe emerged to face these intruders to Nostraman space. Command had fallen to Varsaris following the death of the 33rd Company's commanding praetor on Sothis, and thus compelled the consul to lead recon elements in a sweep of the dead moon. Tenebor was a sepulcher in its character. It was itself the final remnant of Nostramo, following the planet's death at the hands of the Night Lords' cyclonic torpedoes. Intended to serve as a fortress amidst the ruins of their former homeworld, likely as a form of demented gallows humor on the part of Conrad Kurz, Tenebor was a formidable citadel. Its fortifications had been carved into its very crust, and it could house nearly half of the 8th Legion's full complement at any given time. It also possessed, by the words of Council of Varsaris, enough capital ship-grade firepower to challenge any flotilla of Imperial vessels, save perhaps the mighty phalanx of the Imperial Fists. Its decline had, however, preceded the scouring by many years. Supposedly as early as 007-M31, the moon was becoming a shadow of its pre-heresy dark grandeur, its last reported garrison having been posted at a mere 3,000 Night Lords. Nevertheless, Imperial intelligence had placed the moon's continued existence as a threat to the Imperium, as it could potentially have served as an ideal rallying point for fleeing Night Lords. This was clearly not the case, as Varsaris was soon to discover. The structural and atmospheric integrity, being unable to be established from the outside, Storm Eagle gunships deployed Astartes in void-hardened armor marks, squads arrayed in standard Zone Mortalis protocols, lest a firefight break out within Tenebor's cold, cramped confines. No defenses were active. Ingress was easily effected through emergency airlocks. It was here that the first evidence of conflict was discovered. Walls coated in the telltale signs of small arms fire, either from Astartes' bolter rounds or more esoteric energy patterns that a Terran veteran of the Blood Angels attributed to extremely early Martian Volkite weapons. Such arms had not been issued in large quantities in well over a century, yet within the corridors of Tenebor there existed evidence of their widespread use. Furthermore, makeshift firing positions had been erected by what was now seeming to have been the attacking force, a complex undertaking but one favored by the aggressive, rapid deployment operations of the 16th Legion Sons of Horus and the 19th Legion Raven Guard. Amongst these lay the first corpses the Blood Angels discovered, all Nightlords, or their chattel thralls. Mysterious attackers had been canny enough to remove their debt, but this alone suggested their victory had been quite total. By far the greatest concentration of these dead was uncovered in the main hangar bays of the Fortress Moon. Several hundred Auxilia and Nightlords were arrayed in a dramatic tableau that spoke of nothing else but a rout. Most of the baseline humans had clearly been shot as they fled, cavernous bolter shell wounds in pronounced ruination upon their backs. Extensive structural damage, clearly affected by Melta weaponry, spoke of this location as having been the main point of entry for the attackers, and that the defenders had mounted significant resistance. All salvageable materials, and arms and armaments, had been utterly stripped from the hangar bays. The foe had clearly seen fit to loot the moon of anything remotely useful. Such an operation would have required a significant amount of time to complete. Mysterious attackers had clearly been assured that no Night Lords remained alive on board, and that none of their fellow traitors would be capable of mounting a counterattack as they stripped the place bare. The Blood Angels, now relatively assured that no ambush awaited them, at least not one mounted by the Night Lords, moved on to secondary objectives, namely the acquisition of pertinent data. The command spire's cogitator banks had been mercifully undamaged, in what was clearly one of the final major stands of the 8th Legion defenders, their bodies piled around access points and makeshift defenses. Within the depths of the command center was evidence of actual combat. A headless corpse of what was presumed to have been the Night Lord's commanding praetor. The wound and the arena suggested a possible honor duel, with the removal of the head indicating the attacker had claimed it as a trophy. What was discovered upon the cogitator banks was, to the Blood Angels, a surprising quantity of still parsable data. The information on the Night Lord's disposition was almost a decade old, and curiously, many of the positions the various companies of the Legion were noted as holding were marked with ident tags reserved for hostile forces. The Blood Angels, and later scholars, concluded that this was evidence that even as early as 008 M31, 6 years sidereal before the Siege of Terra, the 8th Legion was already making war upon itself. Correct access ciphers had been used by whomsoever had inloaded this data previously, as opposed to the blunt force data djinn that were employed by the Blood Angels. This, presumably, had also been the mysterious attackers, possessing the codes required to access secure data vaults within an Astartes Legion holdfast. All that could be retrieved from internal logs were grainy picked captures and corroded video ciphers. It was obvious immediately, had the evidence thus far not spoken to it already, that the attackers had themselves been Legiones Astartes. Consul Varsaris estimated their number at a multi-company strength, as well as noting they possessed Terminator plate of the Cataphractii Mark, and power armor of mostly older Mark II and III suits, but with significant idiosyncratic modifications. Their heraldry was unknown. Despite the image quality, it was clear that their panoply bore no immediately recognizable Legion symbols or colors. Suspicion was immediately voiced that this was an operation undertaken by the Alpha Legion, whose use of false color operations was legendary, although this was quashed as unhelpful supposition. The only thing that could be established was that an Astartes force of significant disposition had engaged a garrison of some 3,000 Night Lords and well over 1,000 Auxilia, all on their own ground, while vanishing without so much as a trace. Our second item of evidence is drawn from accounts entered to record 3 years subsequently, in 020 M31. A voyage mounted by the rogue trader Erasmus Scathe on his ship the Invidious Glory, with the former hive world of Cairn as its target, entered the Nostramo sector. The rogue trader was seeking riches from the dead nest of traitors. When the fleets of the Imperium had departed from the sector in 017, only two worlds in the volume had been logged as retaining any population. Of the rest, there were only ruins. Some had been conquered by hostile, opportunistic Xenos, with their populations vanishing, while others had clearly fallen to war between loyalist and traitor factions, both galactic and possibly within the Eighth Legion itself. For treasure hunters like Scathe, it was fertile ground, if a dangerous one. Cairn had, before the heresy, been home to untold billions of humans, and was one of the wealthiest worlds in the Nighthaunter's kingdom. The rogue trader imagined everything from stored precious resources to stockpiled arms to, perhaps overenthusiastically, STC fragments. His boundless enthusiasm was muted once his ship entered orbit. Cairn appeared to be living up to the old understanding of its name. The world was a tomb. Whatever disaster had befallen it, its hive towers were toppled ruins, having fallen clearly years previously. Entrance to the sub-hive tunnels and structures proved to be a challenge. As Scathe noted in their log, it appeared that not only had the hive superstructure collapsed, but that access to the below had been purposefully blocked through controlled and guided demolitions. A reason would emerge as soon as the rogue trader's Solar Auxilia armsmen breached the rubble barriers. Scarcely minutes into their ingress, they were beset by debased, troglodytic creatures they initially assumed to be some form of Xenos. A near-silent horde, blinded by the lights stabbing into their tunnels, overwhelmed the first entrance, spilling out of the breach into open ground, only to be driven back by disciplined lasfire from the rapidly redeployed armsman platoon. Only after the terrible creatures had scurried back into their warren was the awful truth revealed. They were human. Degenerated beyond recognition, but human nevertheless, the ruined descendants of a world mutated by their rad-soaked subterranean existence. A second foray into the ruined underhives revealed the true scope of the horrors below. Vast charnel pits of cannibalistic excess, containing the mewling, nearly sightless progeny of the ghoulish once people. While more Solar Auxilia were lost in each excursion, gradually, Scathe's expedition carved out a zone of control from which they could operate in relative safety. It was in these subsequent expeditions that relics from the fall of Cairn were recovered, but not the techno-arcana Scathe had hoped for. Instead, a plethora of Legionnaires Astartes bolt shells were found, alongside fragments of power armor plate in a black and red heraldry unknown to the rogue trader, even with their significant travels across the Imperium. As investigations progressed, Legionnaires Astartes' arms in the same heraldry were also recovered, although all in a state of disrepair or damage as to render them useless. In the deepest vaults of the Hive, Scathe was able to recover data from heavily damaged cogitator banks, and while the recordings and shard files were far from conclusive, they did shed some light on the final days of Cairn. The world was not a victim of war, but it was a deliberate warning left for any of those who should choose to tread upon it. What defenses the Eighth Legion had deigned to provide it were utterly swept aside. The population of the planet were herded like livestock into the depths of their hives before, as had been suspected, they were sealed within. Interestingly, such utterly barbaric genocides had been a hallmark of the traitors' so-called dark compliances, meted out upon loyalist worlds that dared to defy the will of Horus. Yet Cairn was not loyalist. Sworn to the service of the Night Lords, they had been damned by association alone, although it must be noted that there is next to no evidence of loyalist sentiments in the activity within the Nostramo sector during the Horus Heresy. It is thanks to the records of Rogue Trader Scathe that Imperial Archives are granted the first glimpse of the mysterious devastators of the Nostromo sector. The warrior is clearly Astartes, clad in early Crusade-era Mark II power armor that, interestingly, bears a raptor and lightning bolt symbol, indicating the bearer is a veteran of the Unification Wars, and an Astartes almost certainly born of Terra itself. The symbol was one gleefully shorn by the traitor side. Why celebrate the fight for a homeworld if it was done in the name of an emperor you had turned your back upon? It thus became a de facto loyalist emblem. Other symbols are more difficult to discern. The black and blood-red heraldry is just as unknown to us as it was to Scathe, and the symbols even more so. It appears the carvings on the armor are akin to Chthonian gang tribe honor marks, as common amongst the Sons of Horus, and indeed the Night Lords themselves. The mysterious attackers and other picked captures are shown to display trophies taken from felled enemies upon their armor, and, more curiously, bone fragments from what are clearly Xenos origins. Of their motives or character, nothing can be discerned, save for their actions. These speak of loyalty, if not to the Imperium, then perhaps the ideas of the Imperium. Or, maybe better put, not loyalty precisely, but hatred of traitors. Scathe's expedition was ultimately futile. The mysterious Astartes had, as with Tenebor, looted the world of anything remotely valuable. All the techno-arcana that the rulers of Cairn had once held, all their STC fragments and resources, it had all been spirited away while the fires of the heresy consumed the galaxy. It was upon half-truths such as this that the fate of the Nostromo sector was largely based upon for the significant part of the Scouring and later centuries. The Imperium was otherwise occupied, upon front lines where actual traitor threats remained pressing, while what was left of its academics were more concerned with preserving what they could than actively investigating anything new. If a traitor home sector lay purged, it was, honestly, one less thing for the new High Lords of Terra to concern themselves with. A subsequent foray, again mounted by the Blood Angels in M20, happened upon the wreck of the old 8th Legion battleship, the Shroud of Eventide, consigned to an icy grave in the depths of Kaleth, deep within the darker volumes of Nostromo's sector. The ship was raised for salvage, a useful trophy to be granted to one of the 9th Legion's successor chapters in the upcoming Second Founding. With the Legion as Astartes set to be reformed into the Adeptus Astartes, the 9th chapter of the Blood Angels, the Angels Vermilion, supervised the cleaning and rededication of the traitor vessel. But data recovered from within, originating in the vessel's final days of operation, warranted further investigation. The records revealed the ship's final master to have been Charon Ophion, captain of the Night Lord's 39th Company, and elevated to membership of the Chiroptera, an informal group of captains within the Legion that served Conrad Kurz as advisors. In 033, 011, M31, Ophion and his company were assigned, while at anchor at Thramas, to investigate rumors of rogue loyalist fleets originating from the Acum Sothas cluster that were ravaging the Nostromo sector. Ophion was, however, unable to count on much of his own legion for support. Praetor noted that the infighting amongst the Night Lords had reached levels that even his authority as Chiroptera mattered little to nothing. Ophion and the Shroud of Eventide were ambushed over Kaleth, with the flotilla of a dozen unidentified cruisers emerging from the warp. Through communications intercepted by Ophion, he came to know the attackers by their self-identified cognomen, the Ashen Claws. Engaging the enemy, Ophion noted in his logs that by sheer tonnage the Night Lord's fleet could outfight the attackers in a straight battle, but likewise noted to his chagrin that such was the 8th Legion's fractiousness, he had been forced to deploy significant numbers of Astartes to the planet below to quash an uprising within his own ranks, depriving him of skilled officers and line infantry that otherwise would have manned the ship and repelled Astarte's borders. While the Ashen Claws were eventually driven into a retreat, the Shroud of Eventide had sustained such damage that its orbit terminally degraded, crashing the ship into the ice plains of Kalith and leaving the 8th Legion powerless to resist the Claws' renewed attacks. It is from Ophion's records that a broader picture of these mysterious Astartes can be drawn, and the first proper suppositions formed. The Acum Sothis cluster is a small group of worlds, nominally habitable, located on the bleeding edges of the Ghoul Stars, itself an infamous region of galactic space known for its predatory Xenos breeds, including the Scythor Fiends and the Torgoran Bloodreeks, as well as its erratic main system stars. Though settled and brought into compliance by the 16th Legion during the final years of the 30th millennium, several worlds rebelled in 002 M31, under the influence of parasitic Xenos psykers known as the Unsighted Kings. Horus Lupercal, recently elevated to War Master, would not brook the stain upon his Legion's honor that such recidivism posed. He dispatched forces from the 5th Legion Space Wolves, 4th Legion Iron Warriors, and 19th Legion Raven Guard to crush the aliens. In doing so, causing astonishing loss of life among the helpless human thralls beholden to their will. Casualties amongst the Astartes forces were also far beyond expectations. And should this tale begin to sound familiar, one would commend you upon your knowledge of the 19th Legion's history. One of the most infamous engagements of this campaign was entered into Imperial annals as the Battle of Gate 42. While a full account of this conflict can be gleaned from one's own record upon the Raven Guard Legion, suffice it to say, it was the 19th's darkest hour, losing whole assault companies to an impossibly bloody siege. A notable aspect of these casualties was that they were primarily amongst the Terran veterans of the Legion, Astartes for whom their Primarch, Corvus Corax, held little in the way of love. The strife between the Terran and Lycaean elements of the Raven Guard is a facet of the Legion's history it is highly reticent to admit to. The majority of Terran-born Astartes within the 19th were drawn from the Zerik tribes of the Asiatic Dustfields, a brutal population whose totalitarian tendencies sat ill with their Primarch. He was openly reproachful of their colder forms of conduct, and as one of his key reforms upon assuming command, he banned his Legion from being used as occupiers or military police, seeing the methods of how the Zerik-derived Astartes had controlled newly compliant populations as disturbingly similar to those employed by the slavers Korax had been raised under. It was an open secret amongst the Legion that Terran-born Raven Guard were assigned to the bloodiest engagements of the Great Crusade. The Battle of Gate 42 had been this policy's apogee. A thread may now be drawn between the Acum Sothis cluster, the Zerik tribes, and the term Ashen Claws. Imperial scholars in the immediate post-heresy years were unable to find any Crusade-era references to the term. No Astartes formation appeared to use it at the heresy's outbreak, at least not formally. Indeed, it is likely thanks to Corvus Corax's dislike of his misbegotten offspring and his desire to expunge their culture from his Legion that such a reference was so buried. There did indeed exist an Astartes chapter, the 18th of the 19th Legion, that employed that name. They had been of Zerik origin. Ashen Claws, carried over from the tribespeople they had been recruited from. Latterly, the Primarch Horus Lupercal, who favored the usage of the 19th before they found their Primarch, dubbed an infamous tactical maneuver the Ashen Claw, one that involved the use of a sacrificial unit to effect a devastating flank attack. A dubious honor, indeed. A significant number of the Raven Guard survivors following the Battle of Gate 42 were of the 18th chapter, led to their survival by a bellicose Terran-born praetor named Nerat Kirine. These were gathered alongside the remainder of the Raven Guard's old veterans, as well as those born of Deliverance, who, by virtue of character or history, did not fit with Korax's vision of his legion. No honors were bestowed upon the gathered. No laurels were won by these Astartes. Instead, all were formed into nomad predation fleets, void-borne formations intended to be dispatched to the remotest regions of the galaxy, ostensibly to hunt for Xenos nests in purgation campaigns. Further records into the Ashen Claws, miraculously preserved even after Korax's heavy-handed moves to redact them from the gaze of the Divisio Militaris, notes that they were dispatched on crusade in 002 M31, deeper into the Ghoul Stars themselves. The commander of the expedition, one Praetor Calvus, was a Deliverance survivor known for his loyalty to Korax. Clearly, the 19th Primarch ill-trusted those he was consigning to this fate, and by all accounts, it was supremely obvious that the Terran veterans of the Legion knew precisely what this treatment entailed, and bore their genesire no love for it. Of the fate of Praetor Calvus, nothing is known. It is certain that by the return of the Ashen Claws in 011 M31, he had died. With the original complement of 13 capital ships, a score of smaller ships, and some 4,000 Astartes assembled from the survivors of the fighting, the Ashen Claws nomad fleet was a substantial force. Even if 9 years of anti-Xenos operations were to take their toll. Indeed, it is this slow hemorrhaging of resources and Astartes over the course of their long exile that likely led to the tactics displayed in the few records we have of their actions. It is notable that, even with the little we know, these Ashen Claws displayed a clear pattern of procurement of munitions, aspirants, and technology. Thanks to what has now been established, further fragmented knowledge surrounding this mystery can now be pieced together from the date of their exile to the findings of the Scouring. The Battle of Desperation in 011 M31, during the Heresy, saw an Imperial fleet under the command of Archias Odenathus, Chapter Master of the Ultramarines 10th Chapter, strike out from the Loyalist stronghold of Gul'garad against Nightlord's Astartes, who had themselves been survivors of the Thramas Crusade launched against the 8th Legion by the Dark Angels and their Primarch, Lionel Johnson. Desperation was, however, discovered to be far more heavily defended than the 1st Legion's intelligence had reported. The Ultramarines' fleet had intended to outnumber the enemy by 50%, yet the Nightlord's ships were nearly equal to that of their own. They were further confounding expectations by making absolutely no effort to defend the planet. Indeed, they fragmented, with some ships even fleeing the system. Despite this, and despite lacking seemingly any cohesive leadership, the viciousness of the 8th Legion was profoundly effective. The Night Lords succeeded in crippling and boarding Loyalist cruisers Aromantine Vigil and the Heart of Valor, escaping envelopment and fleeing to the cover of Desperation's conjoined moons. The Imperial expedition yet sought to claim the world. Orbital engagement saw further damage sustained from weapons batteries, while deploying elements of the Ultramarines' 22nd Nemesis Chapter and the Mechanicum's Tagmata Gul'garad. The ground forces found little but traps and ambushes laid for them by the Night Lords. Raids from the surviving 8th Legion ships above, and hive towers being collapsed upon them below, the Imperials gradually bled away the initiatives, until the arrival of a fleet bearing the White Raven of Corvus Korax. The fleet was the 18th chapter, the Ashen Claws. Given the date appended to this record, this may have well been their very first re-emergence into Imperial space. 6 capital-class starships, Hoplon-pattern assault cruisers of an ancient Jovian design, engage the Night Lord starships, catching them between the attackers and the Ultramarines and shredding them in hails of long-range crossfire. Initially, the Loyalists were unable to discern the nature of these new attackers. While several of the vessels beheld upon them the White Raven, several others had had their heraldry changed, and all had switched off their ident tags. The general assumption amongst the Ultramarine Command were that these Astartes were Black Shields, renegades beholden to neither side of the conflict, often mercenarial in their outlook, if not outright piratical. Though not precisely common in the Age of Darkness, the Black Shield phenomenon was widespread enough that even regular Astartes forces who had not directly encountered a warband had likely heard tell of their existence, however distantly. The 13th Legion proceeded cautiously. Their hails initially rebuffed, then answered curtly. They received a response from the flotilla's leader, Praetor Nerat Kirine, who had clearly survived and now assumed command of the Ashen Claws. Kirine declared his intent with action as much as words. Ashen Claws landing parties launched from their ships, even as communication was ongoing with the Ultramarines. The former Scions of the Raven followed their own aims, making an objective out of an armorium upon the world below. The battle was as vicious and as bloody as any the Ultramarines had ever encountered. Having secured what munitions they could within, the Ashen Claws retreated with no signal given to the Ultramarines. The 13th Legion was forced to withdraw, leaving the surviving Night Lords planet-bound and abandoned. It could barely count as a victory, and to make matters worse, the Ashen Claws simply disappeared. Despite the many examples of raids that the Claws mounted upon the Nostramo sector, and indeed the likelihood that there were many more that went unrecorded, it is highly unlikely that this one warband was the sole cause of the collapse of the Nostramo sector alone. The volume's proximity to the Ghoul Stars, notorious as that region is for predatory Xenos, is almost a greater risk than any sole marauding Astartes force, to make no mention of the vicious power struggles amongst the leaderless Night Lords. That these factors themselves were only aggravated by the looting and demolition left in the wake of the Claws is certain, but the Black Shields were a comparatively tiny force in the face of even a divided Night Lords Legion, at least in terms of sector scouring capabilities. The fate of Nostramo is one that was far, far from rare throughout the galaxy during the Horus Heresy. Innumerable volumes of space, once populous, fell silent, with many of them never to be heard of again. The reasons for this were as myriad as the tragedies recorded in Imperial annals, and those left silent. That is not to say the Ashen Claws were not effective. Far from it. They had a clearly commendable ability to prosecute a regular warfare against a numerically superior force, exploiting said foe's weakness and rudderlessness while bleeding them at every opportunity. That their mystery endured for so long is a testament to the skills born of their parent legion. Evading capture, evading detection, even in a galaxy as big as this, is no mean feat for such a force of arms. Whatever the causes, the disintegration of any form of governing power within the Nostramo sector had disastrous consequences for the northeastern fringes of the Imperium as it sought to re-establish itself in the Heresy's wake. At the recommendation of the reforming Divisio Militaris, the High Lords of Terra declared an edict that the Nostramo sector and those adjoining it were forbidden to Imperial craft, save those with a special dispensation by ratified writ of the Senatorum Imperialis alone. A great volume of space was functionally abandoned to the predations of Xenos breeds and what scattered warbands of traitors that yet perhaps endured on worlds quite remote. At this point in history, the fate of the Ashen Claws was undocumented. The Imperium was unconcerned about the reports of a peculiar Black Shield band, least of all one in a region of space they had now abandoned. The story was unfortunately similar to many others, and each was lacking in any sense of importance or immediacy given the new order of the galaxy that was being established. It would be decades before the next Imperial counter with the Ashen Claws, if such can even be called. A long-range astropathic message was sent by Far Rim Monitoring Station Oculutus, the 108th Independent Company, led by Captain Chrysos Morturg, formerly of the Death Guard. His company, by dint of his political opposition to the emerging Imperial Order, had been assigned picket duty on the edge of the Ghoul Stars. This was Morturg's fate, decades after the fires of the War Master's treachery had passed. In 063 M31, while conducting a routine sweep, Imperial ships intercepted a fragment of an astropathic message bearing Imperial code memetics of antique origin. The transmission date attached to the message established it at being less than a Terran standard year old. It was assumed to be an error. Simply put, there were no humans out here in the deep dark. Imperial authorities believed it to be a warp echo, perhaps dating to the days of the Great Crusade, despite displaying none of the degradation that usually accompanied such echoes. A full transliteration follows. Fourth Company reports the asteroid settlements of the Orcades brought into compliance per the edict of the Second Crusade, 1,000 souls claimed as bondsmen for the Legion, that it may grow and prosper. Expect our return to Atargatis within a month for reassignment. What then of the fate of the Ashen Claws? One can confirm, albeit through sources diverse and potentially dubious, that they yet endure to this present day, a pocket empire of Astartes renegades, perhaps amongst the last surviving black shields of the Age of Darkness, or bearers of their legacy, at the very least. They are not a heretic in the same sense as those that swear to the Dark Gods. Indeed, one has it on authority that they view the Thralls of Chaos with utter disgust and contempt, and make war upon them at every opportunity. They were, however, far from loyal in any traditional sense. They obeyed edicts of neither Emperor nor Imperium. They placed bonds of fraternal devotion above all else in the known universe. From scattered accounts pieced together over 10 millennia, a pattern emerges of a petty empire, a miniature realm, squatting within a region of space where the light of the Emperor is weak and his reach perilous. Raids upon Imperial worlds, even as early as M31, as the previous transliteration illustrates, were necessary to ensure these renegades remained supplied, and especially supplied with aspirants, whose Astartes ascension they could clearly undertake, as well as the sundry arms, armaments, and resources they needed to expand. It has been theorized that, by the late heresy and immediately subsequently, the Ashen Claws held dominion over Atargatis Prime, Orcades, Badar, Mabaroshi, and Zviat Latagor. They maintained an armory born of practicality, capable of deploying a variety of interface fighters, bombers, and assault craft in support of their rapid engagement infantry, notably shunning the armored warfare echelons that typified some legions and later chapters. Only the most robust marks of vehicle, such as the Primaris Lightning Strike Fighters, were retained. Those more difficult to maintain were simply discarded. It has been noted in one's sources, upon the modern clause, that a pronounced degradation of character has been evinced. The old habits of the Zerik tribes have seemingly re-emerged. The Ashen Claws have become slavers again, although apparently treat the citizens of Atargatis, at the very least, with relative equality. This is, one imagines, likely born of necessity. The human population of the Ghoul Stars is perilously low, and thus cannot be wasted. The fate of the Ashen Claws has, over the millennia, become somewhat intertwined with another void-based, asymmetrical, and altogether mysterious chapter, the Carcharodons. These two chapters are known to engage with each other in mutual trade, providing supplies and sundries that the other requires. The Carcharodons are nominally loyal to the Imperium, although they prosecute their wars and engage in practices in manners many would find questionable. While one shall explore the chapter more fulsomely in a later record, it can suffice one's acolytes to know that they are in almost total certainty sharing of a common ancestor, that of Corvus Corax. They are kin of the Predation fleets, exiled to the Void, yet following altogether different fates. Ironically, the Claws view their lost brothers as mongrels, piling scorn upon their choice to remain loyal to the Imperium that viewed them all those millennia ago as simply discardable. The Carcharodons, for their part, seem to care little for the opinions of the Claws, or indeed anyone at all. They chart their own fates, yet nevertheless see these renegade Astartes as useful allies, if only of convenience. Thus we arrive at the unraveled mystery of the Ashen Claws, at their present, sorry, and bitter circumstances. They are jilted sons of an uncaring father. They are bearers of a dark legacy. They are harrowers of traitors, and yet despoilers of loyalists. They are a curious thing indeed, beholden to none, yet bitter in the meager existence their path has seemingly inevitably led them to. Until such a time as one has the vim and vigor with which to explore further topics of Historica with the Ave Imperator. Gloria in excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.